The Leslie Marshall Show, a true democracy in talk radio. Of, for, and by you, the people.
Live from our nation's capital, it's Deadline DC with Brad Bannon. Don't want to be an American idiot. Don't want a nation under the new media. And can you hear the sound of hysteria? The subliminal mindfuck America. Welcome to our new.
Okay. Barely. Welcome to Deadline DC with Brad Bannon. I'm Brad Bannon. I'm a Democratic strategist, a columnist for The Hill in Washington, D.C., and a political analyst for news radio stations KNX in Los Angeles and WGN in Chicago. My company, Bannon Communications Research, polls for progressive issue groups, labor unions, and Democrats. BannonCR.com is the sponsor of today's show. If you want to learn more about me and my political polling company, or if you have any suggestions or ideas for Deadline DC, you can reach me on Twitter at Brad Bannon, all one word. Welcome to all of you watching me on Twitter or Periscope. Our guest in the first half hour is Congressman Ro Khanna, who is serving a second term representing California's 17th congressional district located in the heart of Silicon Valley. Representative Khanna sits on the House Budget, Armed Services, and Oversight and Reform Committees, and is first vice chair of the Congressional Progressive Caucus. He also serves as an assistant whip in the Democratic Caucus. He was also national co-chair of Bernie Sanders' presidential campaign. Congressman, welcome back to Deadline DC with Brad Bannon. First of all, we just heard that the president is going to be released from Walter Reed Hospital today at 6:30 Eastern Time. This has been one of the craziest weeks going back to the presidential debate that I can remember in American politics. What do you make of last week's presidential debate and the president's activities, including his joyride yesterday around Walter Reed Hospital?
Well, Brad, you know, everyone in the country almost was wishing a full and speedy recovery to the president. But the question really is, who is going to keep the country safe, including the president and his family? And the reality is that the White House now has more cases of COVID than the countries of Taiwan, New Zealand, and Vietnam combined. I mean, it's unbelievable. I would have never thought as an American that the White House would be more vulnerable than developing nations. And so to me, it's actually not even about the president having COVID or the risk he may be putting others in. It's frankly the fact that we have an administration that is failing in its basic duty, which is how do you keep this country safe?
Yeah, it's really incredible. Do you think, well, let me ask a question here. You know, one of the things that's always bothered me about Donald Trump's presidency is the example he sets to the public. His demeaning comments about women, his insults against members of, against Latinos and African-Americans. And, you know, his behavior during the COVID crisis has been abysmal and a scandal. Do you think Americans are going to learn anything from this horrible episode?
Brett, I think you put your finger on the greatest harm that Trump has done to our nation. Obviously, there was the immediate harm to the most vulnerable of children who were in cages and denying people to come into this country for religion. But when you look at it, some of the other harms he's done, I'm confident President Biden will be able to reverse. He will be able to refund the State Department. He'll be able to rebuild our alliances. We'll be able to get back on track. But what will take, I think, decades to overcome is what he has done in coarsening the American public discourse and making racism and sexism acceptable, in convincing 30 to 40% of this country to not believe in science. And I think that's going to take a long time. I don't think that just him leaving the White House is going to be enough, and that suddenly we're going to have an epiphany as a country. I think it's going to take long, hard work for my generation, decades of work, to rebuild public trust and to restore our democracy and undo the damage he's done.
I mean, we all hope that Joe Biden is elected president. But it seems to me, if he does win the presidential election, he's going to have his hands full. The pandemic, the shattered economy, climate change lurking just around the corner. But one of the things that I think it's going to be very difficult for Joe Biden to reverse is that during his presidency, Donald Trump has encouraged hate groups, right-wing hate groups all across the country, like the Proud Boys are a perfect example. Chris Wallace gave the president an opportunity to denounce hard-right groups like the Proud Boys during the debate Tuesday. And he refused to do so. In fact, he seemed to even encourage them. What can Joe Biden do to reverse the climate of hate that Donald Trump has created during his presidency?
Well, I don't think it's just on Vice President Biden. I think it's on all of us as citizens to be able to do that. But he can certainly start by setting a clear moral tone that every president in my lifetime, from Jimmy Carter to Ronald Reagan to Bush Sr., Bush, President George W. Bush have set, and Clinton and Obama, which is that we are a country based on citizenship and equality and not based on race and religion. I mean, it's almost the cliched message which you hear in presidential speeches. You almost long for that because Trump has totally undercut that. And so I think that in this way, Biden's decency, his understanding of the American project of what makes us truly exceptional as a nation will come through, and that can set the tone. And then it's really the hard work is going to be with school teachers and faith leaders and community leaders to combat extremism and hate. And tech is going to have a big responsibility as well. They can't be amplifying and recommending things like QAnon conspiracy theories.
Yeah, it's really very sad. Our guest in this half hour is Congressman Ro Khanna of California. He represents the Silicon Valley. He is also a prominent member of the House Progressive Caucus and the House Democratic Caucus. He was co-national chair of the Bernie Sanders presidential campaign. We're going to go to a break now for our radio listeners, but we'll continue this interview with Congressman Khanna for our Periscope TV and Facebook Live viewers. So everybody hang on. There's a lot to talk about today because, as I said in the open, it's been a crazy week and a crazy year in American politics. The president, according to the national polls, crashed and burned in a debate last Tuesday. There's a vice presidential debate coming up on Wednesday. The president and several key members of his White House staff and his campaign have come down with COVID. It's crazy, but we'll be back in a few minutes for our radio listeners and right away for our TV listeners. Again, welcome back to Deadline DC with Brad Bannon. Our guest in this half hour is Congressman Ro Khanna from the Silicon Valley in California. Let's start with this. Congressman, you brought up a subject that I wanted to ask you about. It's been months now since emergency pandemic relief to unemployed Americans expired. The Republicans in the Senate don't seem to be in any hurry to do anything about it. I saw one poll today, I think it was a national survey, that showed that Americans would much rather have the Senate consider passing a COVID relief package than they would passing on the president's new nomination for the Supreme Court. Is there any hope for those people out there who are desperately waiting for months now for pandemic economic relief, or is that a lost cause?
Well, that polling doesn't surprise me. I mean, people are desperate to get unemployment assistance. They need money for rent. They need a stimulus check. And the irony is that you have now Steve Mnuchin and the president basically begging the speaker to pass a liberal stimulus bill, because they know that the president's last thread in terms of his shot in reelection is contingent on it. And so, you know, of course, it's the speaker's bill and he's going to take credit. But the speaker is a person who puts the country first, and she's working diligently to try to come to a deal which was going to have an expansion of the earned income tax credit, child tax credit, some really good provisions. And then I think the ball will be in McConnell's court. And he's saying that he doesn't want to move the bill unless half his caucus is behind it. And I think we'll see whether he kills the deal or not.
Do you think Senate Republicans are going to pay a political price on November 3rd for completely ignoring the victims of the pandemic? Both their health care and their economic leads are, and they just, you know, they figure they can skate through this without any problems.
I think they will pay a price, which is if nothing passes. I mean, the irony is if McConnell agrees to the deal, you know, maybe they can salvage something because they would have done something right before the election, even though they dragged their feet for 3 months. But if they don't do anything, I absolutely think they will pay a price. And that's why, for the life of me, I can't understand why McConnell and Trump aren't jumping at the deal the speaker has offered.
Okay. Let's go back to the presidential race. I think it was widely acknowledged that the president's debate against Joe Biden was a disaster. Yesterday, several polls came out. One was an NBC News Wall Street Journal poll that showed Joe Biden was ahead in the head-to-head against Trump by 13 points, which is almost double what it was before the debate. Also yesterday, the New York Times released polls that did in battleground states in Pennsylvania and Florida, which showed, I believe, Joe Biden had a 5-point lead in both states. What is the state of this presidential race right now?
Brett, you know the polling better than I do. That's your line of work. But I would just say that I think Joe Biden is ahead. I think the momentum is with him. I don't think it's a 13-point race. I think we're in too polarized of times, and certainly it's not a 13-point race in the battleground states. I'd say it's a 5-to-7-point race advantage for Biden. But then when you factor into that voter suppression, when you factor into that the risk of absentee ballots, when you factor into that that this president is going to litigate the count, it's still too close for comfort. And as you know, these races can swing a few points in the last week. I mean, that's what happened. If people think that the polling was off with Hillary Clinton, it was slightly off. But the bigger issue was in the last 10 days, the unexpected happened with Comey and the race swung 5 points. So we've seen already two unexpected events, and we're just at the point where Access Hollywood happened in 2016. And we've had the passing of Justice Ginsburg, and we've had the president's diagnosis with COVID. Who knows how many other curveballs are going to be there, all of which is to say I would bet on Joe Biden, but it's not a slam dunk.
Well, let me ask you this question. Joe Biden, when the president's illness was announced late last week, Joe Biden decided, took all the negative ads against the president off the air. He's still running positive ads. Today, Joe Biden, I believe, is campaigning in Florida. Now, the question is, do you think Joe Biden made the right decision in pulling his negative ads against Donald Trump?
Well, Joe Biden is such a decent person. I think the tone he struck in terms of wishing the president well, wishing his family well, is the right tone. You know, you still have independent groups that are rightfully pointing out the president's weaknesses. I think if Joe Biden wants to use his campaign funds to tell the story about why Joe Biden is going to be a great leader for the country, I think that's probably the right call. I mean, yes, when you run against an incumbent, you have to make the case to fire them. I think that has been made. And I actually think that too often challengers don't make enough of the affirmative case. And so to the extent that Biden is doing that, I think that's a good thing.
Okay. One last question. Because of the president's illness and the illnesses of so many people in the White House, well, I think we're up to four Republican senators who have tested positive for COVID now, with the addition of Ron Johnson from Wisconsin this morning. Do you think it's the last 30 days are going to be just about the pandemic, or is there an opportunity for Democrats to discuss economic issues, which are also very prominent in the minds of the voters?
Well, I think that the fact that the president and all of these senators are being diagnosed with COVID has reminded Americans that, you know, this disease hasn't gone away, that the next president is going to be dealing with it probably for the next year, and that this is the biggest national security issue for this country. It's an issue of who can keep the country safe. And that's why I'm more confident today in Joe Biden's win than I have been previous times I've been on, because I think it's become so apparent to people that Biden is going to be a better commander-in-chief. He's going to pass that first test of keeping Americans safe better than Donald Trump. And I think the economic, you know, I believe the economic issues are so important, but I think that, and I hope Biden will continue to talk to, about them, but I think Trump is now going to fail that very first test of who can keep Americans safe.
Congressman, thank you very much for joining us today on Deadline DC with Brad Bannon. Good luck with your reelection campaign, and we can all hope that Joe Biden comes through in the next month.
Well, I always enjoy being on, Brad, and enjoy your columns on the Hill. So keep writing, and look forward to talking to you soon.
Thank you again, Congressman, for taking time out of your busy schedule to join us on Deadline DC today. For our listeners, we still have more to go in Deadline DC with Brad Bannon. In the second half hour, as usual, we're going to have our provocative progressive political panel with talk radio host Tara Devlin and our own progressive activist Mark Grimaldi. So stay tuned. We'll be back right after these messages with more Deadline DC with Brad Bannon.
If you miss Leslie on TV this week, catch up at LeslieMarshallShow.com.
Okay. Welcome back to Deadline DC with Brad Bannon. And we're resuming the show so we can continue our discussion of what's been a crazy week in American politics. And as crazy as it is, it'll probably get even crazier with Donald Trump as president in the next 4 weeks. I guess the one of the big news items of the day we're going to talk about, the provocative progressive political panel, is the president is either leaving or is being released from Walter Reed Hospital. Today it's 6:30 Eastern time, so we can go back and infect the still healthy staff at the White House. Today, two more prominent Republicans who tested positive for COVID, White House press secretary and Wisconsin Senator Johnson. There are now four Republican senators who've been tested positive for COVID in the last few days. And that may have some bearing on the president's attempt to ram his new Supreme Court nominee through the upper chamber. The president will recover with the benefit of the best health care that the United States government can provide. But many ordinary people have little or no health care to get them through the crisis. To make things worse, Republican state attorney generals have asked the Supreme Court to nullify the Affordable Care Act, which provides health insurance to millions of Americans. The spread of the disease is bad news for the nation, the president, and millions of Americans. If there is any good to come out of all of this, the president's illness may remind Americans, especially Republicans dismissive of the threat, that COVID is still a crisis and hopefully it will discourage people from going into public places without masks. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi hopes the president's diagnosis leads to a saner approach to the pandemic. A president should set the example for his fellow citizens, and Trump could perform a valuable public service in the waning days of his presidency by warning Americans to take proper precautions for their own safety and the safety of friends, family, and strangers they come into contact with. You can read the rest of this column and my take in the presidential race in the Hill every Monday. You can Google to see the column. You can Google muckrack.com/Brad-Bannon. Now it's time for a provocative progressive political panel. Our first panelist today is Tara Devlin. She is a New York City-based comedian, writer, and the founder of RepublicanDirtyTricks.com, also known as R-T-T Daily. Tara's unapologetically liberal podcast, Tara Besta, is 100% listener-supported, free from corporate influence, and five-star viewer-reviewed. Join the resistance by becoming a patron of Tara Besta and RTD Daily at Patreon, that's P-A-T-R-E-O-N, .com/Tara Devlin. If you can follow Tara on Twitter at Real Tara Devlin and on Instagram at Tara, D-A-C-K-T-Y. Joining Tara on the panel is progressive political activist Mark Grimaldi. Mark has worked on Get Out the Vote operations for several Democratic presidential candidates, including Joe Biden. Mark is also active in campaign finance reform and efforts to promote cancer research. His Twitter handle is Mark J. Grimaldi. Okay. First of all, Tara, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
The president gets out at 6:30. Maybe in 20 years we'll be saying the same thing when he's released from prison. Who knows? We can only hope. What do you make of this? You know, basically, it seems to me the Trump campaign, the Senate Republican caucus, and the White House have been COVID confectionery ovens.
Yeah.
What do you make of all this with the president and the other COVID test among Republican grandees?
It's appalling. It's completely appalling and shows us why we are the COVID capital of the world. And it's nothing to be proud about. I don't know why he's making a victory lap around the all of his easily led supporters. They should all be appalled, but they don't know better, frankly. for some reason. The thing is, he is bullying his doctors and bullying the nurses to let him out. It is all a publicity stunt. He doesn't want to stay in the hospital because it doesn't look good for him. That's about it. Whether he really is well enough to leave is another story. So he'll make a big show about it, and the dupes will eat it up, that's for sure. And honestly, I don't have any sympathy for him or the rest of them. They should be ashamed what they've done to this country. I have sympathy for the 210,000 who are dead because of them, and the people who are sick, and the 1,000 Americans who will die today because of them. They don't like dealing with this pandemic. Well, they're like infants. We could have shut down the country and done it like every other country instead of screaming, liberate Michigan, liberate Virginia. He was a hindrance and is and remains a hindrance to our progress. He's the one making us sick, as the studies, well, I think the Washington Post did a study and some other news organization that he was the primary source of propaganda, of misinformation. And on top of the other stuff that he said about drinking bleach, injecting bleach, people in Texas ended up in the emergency room from drinking bleach. So it's appalling. And the other thing I want to say, just an aside, they released the list of what drugs he's on for coronavirus. How come there's no hydroxychloroquine in there? I thought he was taking hydroxychloroquine. We kept hearing, oh, I've been on it for 2 weeks. Well, you've been on it? You're taking it? Oh, yes, it's great. Everyone's taking it. It's just sweeping the nation. I'm receiving hundreds of calls about it. And then at the time, we had to go through this whole, oh, yeah, you're receiving calls. And then they had a report on it. And we're trapped in the manias of a con man. And I don't know, the whole system is set up to keep this game going. It's appalling. The whole thing is appalling. There are no consequences to his actions. You know that if Joe Biden had coronavirus, if it came down that it was Joe Biden, you know what he would be doing. Twitler would be at one of his Nuremberg rallies mocking Joe Biden, calling him weak. Yeah, saying how, oh, he'd be doing imitations of him, gasping for air, like, and Hunter Biden saying, oh, please, Daddy, don't go. I need a job. Yeah, that's what he would be doing. And all of his audience would be eating it up. So I don't know. It makes me sick. They all make me sick. And they honestly make America sick. The whole country. So,
well, they literally have made all America.
Yes,
most of
exactly.
Sick.
Exactly.
Mean, last time I counted, more than 7 million Americans have been afflicted with COVID.
Yep.
More than 200,000 have died. And so it's getting completely out of hand. Mark, you want to join in on this?
I think it is important to remember, as Tara said, the average, you know, American, as far as income status, health insurance, what they have access to and what they're confronted with in with this disease. And the other thing that's enraging is, you know, the president had access to, you know, all of the best masks, the best information on how to not only protect himself, but protect those around him. And he simply refused to utilize them because, you know, he looked like more of a tough guy without wearing a mask. I mean, that is the attitude of a 3-year-old, you know, and that's an insult to some 3-year-olds, you know. Yes. I have a 3-year-old who wears a mask and she doesn't give me a hard time about it. So, I know we're coming up on break here, Brad, but it's really disheartening, and it's one of the many reasons that we need to kick this guy out of the White House, starting now with early voting.
Yeah. Yep. Okay, we are going to break now for our radio listeners. We're going to stay connected for our viewers on Periscope TV and Facebook Live. All I have to say is that the administration's handling of the COVID crisis, especially in the last week, has been stupid, stubborn, and irresponsible. We'll be back with more of Deadline DC for our radio listeners after these messages. And remember, if you're watching us on Periscope TV or Facebook Live, don't go anywhere, because we're going to be continuing our discussion with the provocative progressive political panel. With Brad Bannon. We are doing our provocative progressive political panel. Our guest on the panel today are progressive activist Mark Grimaldi and also radio talk show host and of Tara Busta, Tara Devlin.
Hello.
Let's start this. We've been talking about the COVID and the Trump reality show. Let's turn to a more serious subject. The president has nominated a new Supreme Court justice to replace the late and great Ruth Bader Ginsburg. The president's nominee, Amy Coney Barrett, is on record as wanting to reverse the Roe versus Wade decision on women's choice, women's health care. She also wants to reverse the Affordable Care Act. And if that happened, about 20 million Americans would lose their health insurance. And today we have a new Supreme Court wrinkle, just like we needed another one. Two of the conservative justices on the court wrote that they want to overturn the Supreme Court's decision legitimizing gay marriage. And my guess is if Barrett becomes a member of the Supreme Court, the conservatives will have a 6-3 majority, and they can pretty much, they will be able to do pretty much anything they want to, which is a very scary thought. So my question to the panel is, what would happen in this country if women didn't have the constitutional right to choose to have an abortion as they do under Roe versus Wade? What if 20 million Americans lost their health care if the Affordable Care Act was declared unconstitutional? And what would happen to American society if gay marriage wasn't legal anymore? Tara?
Yeah. Well, here's the thing. It would, of course, it would be an abomination, and Republicans are a minority greed center death cult. They represent a minority of people. They receive fewer votes. I don't, even when they're in the majority, Twitler received fewer votes. Mitch McConnell, the Senate,
3 million fewer votes than Hillary.
Exactly.
Clinton.
And the Senate received fewer votes. And when the Republicans, I call them, were in the House, when they were in the majority in the House, they also, the Democrats, they won 1 million more votes, and they were still in the minority. Yeah. So this is a, they are the, it's the tyranny of the minority, and this is how it has, we have to really fight like that. They are illegitimate. What's his name? Kavanaugh is illegitimate. Gorsuch is illegitimate. These are illegitimate Supreme Court seats that they stole, and now Amy Coney Barrett or whatever is illegitimate. And we should also be very concerned, because of my whole thing for years, I've been saying this, and they keep proving me right, and I hate it, that the Republicans don't like democracy. It's really conservatism. Conservatism is the ideology of the elites. It always has been for Western civilization. They don't like democracy. That's why, instead of, when they lose elections, they don't think, oh, how am I going to knock on doors and get and build a coalition or whatever. They say, how can I kick people off the voting rolls? How can I stop Democrats from voting or my opposition? So this whole stealing of the court, putting unqualified Supreme Court justices on the not just the I mean on the every court in the land, not just the Supreme Court. They're pushing justices and judges that the ABA rates unqualified. I mean, it's embarrassing. But they're all young, and that's what they want to overturn democracy. Right. And they want to overturn democracy. And this is an attack on democracy itself. And that is what, I mean, this is what, you got to look in all the overthrows of democracy and republics throughout history. Taking over the courts is what the autocrat does. It is, because when you go to the court for recourse, you will get none because it will be corrupted. And that's one of the pillars of democracy that they, it's not just the norm that they're breaking up. They're attacking the entire system that the founders fought a revolution to entrust to us. It's exactly what Hitler did. They took over the courts as they were accumulating power legitimately through the democratic process. So this is a big problem. And it's also a problem that the Democrats do not fight as if our lives depended on it, because they do. What will happen if they get to roll back Roe v. Wade and all that? Of course, it's going to be a disaster. And as far as abortion is concerned, they only do this to throw the red meat to the dum-dums who will vote for them anyway, while they accumulate and concentrate wealth into the hands of the elite and then cut off our means of doing anything about it. So what will happen is that legal abortion making abortion illegal does not reduce the numbers of abortion. It does is reduce safe abortions. Women have been getting abortions for recorded history. This is what happens. And the fact is, if they don't like abortions, this is the other thing I need the Democrats to hear. When they say that they are pro-life, they are not pro-life, they are pro-birth. And also, abortions go down under Democratic policies. Expanded health care, universal higher education, all of those policies. Oh, sex ed, reality-based sex ed and family planning. They reduce the numbers of abortions, not making abortion illegal. All that does is make it unsafe, and it also kills women. So there you go. The Democrats need to fight like that. Like, we have truth, justice, and the American way on our side, because we do. Really.
Mark, you want to weigh in on this? Now, we could have a very strange situation, Mark, where Joe Biden becomes president. We have a Democratic majority in both the House of Representatives and the Senate. And the new 6-3 conservative majority in the Supreme Court basically will be able to stop anything that the new president or Congress do. Right. And so, Mark, you want to comment on this?
Then I think a couple things in that situation. First, we have to still realize, as terrible as that sounds, it still would be infinitely better than the country and all of us are today.
Yeah.
Because you would not have a madman in the White House. And even if literally we were stuck dead in the water as they were invalidating laws, as bad as that is, we would still be infinitely safer than we are today. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't think it's going to go exactly that way, but that will be dependent on how aggressive the Democrats and a future President Biden would be in response to acts like that. You have to be ready to expand the size of the Supreme Court if that happens. And I think that, you know, that has to be on the table, regardless of whether or not you do it, because if nothing else, to let those justices know that you want to play this way, then this is how we're going to play as well. And if you have the votes to do that and you have the majority to do that, then you damn well better do it, because otherwise in the 2022 midterms, you may see primaries in the Democratic Party removing people, like you actually already saw this year with some Democrat seats that we thought, you know, people thought were going to just be there because they had been there a long time. But I think you have to be ready to do that. And the other thing is, don't listen to this BS, you know, from the president about, you know, him beating the virus and all this stuff. He's hopped up on steroids right now. That's Sanjay right. Gupta yep. just said on TV that they give yep. these people steroids, and he's seen cancer patients and other people claim how great they feel because that's one of the effect right. of the steroids. Yeah. And the other thing is he's getting the best care in the world after paying $750 in taxes towards it.
I know.
And all the medicine he's getting is going to a mini hospital at the White House. And he's telling people on Twitter not to be afraid of it. So don't let your guard down. The CDC just revised its guidelines that disease can go further than 6 feet and poorly ventilated areas like schools. So we're not out of the woods yet, and don't listen to his BS. Just basically whatever he does, don't do that.
That's right.
Well, we won't. Hopefully our listeners won't. That's all for today, friends. Thanks to our guest, Congressman Ro Khanna, Tara Devlin of Tara Busta, and progressive activist Mark Grimaldi. I'm here Mondays at 3:00 Eastern Time. If the Lord is willing, the creek don't rise, and Bill Barr doesn't declare martial law or designate Deadline sure. DC as an anarchist jurisdiction. This is Brad Bannon. Stay strong, stay safe, and don't drink the Clorox. It didn't do the president any good, and it won't help you either. We'll talk to you next Monday. Thank you.